empty podcast in a forest and no one is around to hear it, does it still make a sound? We'll never know, little crows, because here you are, listening to the trees of truth falling in the forest of the sixth world nonsense. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, the Anarchy in Podcasting Network is now live again with fresh insight. And I am the only host you will ever need, Opti. And this is my baby, the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. Today's episode brings you the doings from 2040 to 2043. I feel like I need to warn you, little crows, today's episode is going to be a long one. So grab your soy calf and relax, because you're in for quite a ride. First, the skinny on the world events front, little crows. In a bold move, the Athabascan Council of the Far North Americas decides to recognize Sasquatches as sapient creatures and gives them the same rights as every other citizen. Now, an important note here. Sasquatches are not the same as Wendigos. Sasquatches are big and tall and usually have brown or black fur, and they're super good at replicating sounds, but most still choose to use sign language as their primary communication. And a little known fact about Sasquatches is that most of them have latent magical abilities, and many of them become shamanic magic users. Wendigos, on the other hand, are a bit smaller and are all magically awakened. They all have white fur, and oh yeah, they eat metahumans in order to survive and grow stronger. In the final analysis, if you want to stay alive, don't piss off a Sasquatch, but don't go anywhere within 5 miles of a Wendigo. Mr. Pink, take note. I'll do a special episode sometime about how Wendigos are made. And no, it doesn't involve when two Wendigos are in love and they give each other a special hug. Reacting to the NAN sanctions, the CAS decided to place a bunch of token metahumans in key cabinet positions at the behest of President-elect Alexander. Of course, it didn't mean they were any less racist, but at least they played along with others long enough for the NAN to remove the sanctions. In Aztlan, after centuries of near-complete religious dominance, the Roman Catholic Church is kicked out of South America and declared a revolutionary organization. Now, that might seem strange to many of you little crows, given what you think you know about the Catholic Church, but in South America, they grow the priests to be fight-the-power Robin Hood types, always fighting corruption and whatnot and pissing off the church in Rome to no end. Nobody's perfect, of course, but apparently they posed enough of a threat for Aztlan to brutally crack down on Catholics within their borders. In Chernanog, the president, Liam O'Connor, who had no idea what he was doing, married Lady Brain Day and secured her position on the Court of Stewards as a Prionsa. I would suggest that you do some homework on elven culture in the Shire to know exactly what that meant for the lady, but, as with many things, it will have to probably wait for a special episode. Nevertheless, following this consolidation of power, O'Connor gets himself elected as High Steward and becomes the most powerful single person in the Shire, formerly known as Ireland. Of course, only a little bit more than a year later that Liam O'Connor disappears, and after a respectable time of grief, about 2 weeks, Lady Brain Day declares herself the queen of the Seelie Court and commands power in Chernanog as a near-absolute monarch. I am sure that this is completely coincidental. Over in Germany, the South Germans decide to put metahumans in camps and exterminate them. Little crows, if there's one thing we have learned from the sixth world that we should have learned in the fifth, it is that putting large groups of people that aren't like you into camps in order to kill them never, ever works out well in your favor in the end. Nevertheless, it happens. The next day, an entire range of volcanoes in the area erupts simultaneously, and the Southern German League decides that its eugenics project is probably not a good idea. Still, the metas in the area get the idea and flee to other countries. Constantinople was Istanbul, now it's Constantinople, not Istanbul. Been a long time gone, Istanbul. Why did Istanbul get the works? Because in October of 2042, Constantinople declared independence. Changed its name back. Guess I just liked it better that way. In February of 2043, the Black Forest Troll Kingdom is created. And trust me, little crows, you have not lived unless you have had their dark giant brandy. The following week won't be much fun, and you might not remember it, but you will have a great time. Now, this is a bit unique. Normally, dwarfs tend to integrate themselves into traditionally human societies. But the exception is the Grand Duchy of West Rhine-Luxembourg, which was founded in April of 2043. Again, if you want to know what's good on their menu, I suggest their smoked pepper ham and their blackened beer duck. Plus, if you like luxury, all of their touristy areas have etched gold on everything. In a slightly less tourist-friendly bit of news, the Tsimshian tribe reinstitute the practice of public execution for criminals, which might not mean much, except if you're a Shadowrunner. Good times. Now, for the corporation news. In September of 2040, Renraku begins a massively ambitious project in Seattle, where it lays ground for an arcology, essentially a self-contained habitat where its members would exist for their entire lives under the care of a single corporation, in this case, Renraku. Here's a spoiler. The arcology gets finished, and there is no overestimating the number of Shadowrunners who have made their entire living off extracting wage slaves and salarymen from Renraku's arcology, which was not as easy as it may have seemed. Of course, while the arcology might seem restrictive and dominating, it is in no way as icky as when New Horizons launched its Super Kids project in late 2040. While touting a brand that made normal kids into super kids, it seemed that there were more going on than met the eye when the kids started killing themselves. A further look into the program revealed forced genetic testing and manipulation, physical, sexual, and mental abuse, as well as an entire host of missing children for whom super was the last thing they became. In March 2041, Global Oil merged with UCAS Steel, and also in the UCAS, automated production of coffin motels becomes widespread. What's a coffin motel? Jeez, Mr. Pink, you are new at this. No, it's not for vampires. Although, never mind. They're like a whole bunch of beds, or sometimes cubicle things, stacked on top of each other. If you can't afford to crash anywhere else, you can get a room in a coffin motel for next to nothing, because that's all you get, nothing. Just a bed and very infinitesimal amount of privacy. You'll need one day, I promise. In Japan, Yamatetsu is granted AAA status and gets a seat on the corporate council. At the same time, a previously unknown investor known as Miss Buttercup somehow acquired 11% of the newly crowned corporation. Of course, nearly a decade later, and after much manipulation, Buttercup just stands up in a board meeting and announces herself to be a free spirit. With all kinds of powers that she used and uses to influence all the right people in the right places, half the board was scared witless, and the other half quickly gets on board behind her. This doesn't do wonders for the corporation's public relations, and amongst other things, that's why you don't see Yamatetsu in the top 10 anymore. You see the corporation Evo instead. Now, there aren't many of you out there, but there are some of you who are even more paranoid than I am. For you, I give this story. In June of 2042, Ares launches Project Cydonia, which is a probe that shoots to Mars, takes all sorts of pictures and readings, and then comes back. Well, in December of 2042, on the return trip, Cydonia is intercepted by unknown parties and all data is destroyed. You want to know what that data was, don't you, chummers? And you want to know who destroyed the Cydonia, don't you? Alright, tread lightly here, little crows. This info ain't anywhere near public. The first pictures to ever come back from Mars were from a NASA probe in 2001. It showed two things. Pyramids. And the skeletal remains of some giant, draconic-looking creature. And if you really want to see them, I'll put them up in the show notes for you. Don't tell anyone where you got them from, dig? A manned follow-up mission called Operation Discovery took place in 2011, during the Awakening. It crashed, killing 5 of the 8 space guys on board. Nobody ever heard anything about what they found, and to be honest, everyone was so focused on the Awakened stuff that year, in the Year of Chaos, and everything after, that not many people bothered to look into it. When the Cydonia probe went up 30 years later, there was a lot of data on board, however, and NASA and its special forces units called the Vale already knew what was on Mars, and had known since 2001, and wanted to keep it hidden from everyone else, so they intercepted and destroyed the probe, then planted fake and hokey picture data on the remains of the Cydonia to throw everyone off the trail and make Ares look foolish, which worked beautifully. All of this didn't come out till much later, and only then due to colossal... well, spoilers, little crows. Anyway, I'll put the fake pic in the show notes as well. Now, would it surprise you, little crows, to know that there exists some unadulterated footage of what the Project Cydonia saw? Would you like to know what the space guys brought back from Mars in 2011? Raven's eyes have seen this! And while it wasn't Olopti what discovered it, let's just say that no one, not even Ares Space Covert Ops, is safe from totemic persuasion. First things first, the Cydonia has hours of detailed footage of the pyramids. They're legit. And old. Older than old. Ancient. And the skeleton that looks like a dragon? It ain't a dragon. I don't know what it is, but the evidence DNA doesn't lie. The bone they brought back ain't draconic. The other stuff doesn't really matter. And I'm pretty sure that since Evo has been on Mars since 2063, they know more than they're telling, since they ain't telling anything. If any of you runners are interested, I know a Johnson that'll pay your grandma's weight in Nuyen if you want to go up there and find out. Speaking more about Ares, Nicholas Aurelius built Ares into a megacorporation, but stepped out of the limelight for a bit when Sakahisa Tajika ran things as CEO from 2023 to 2028. He came back as CEO for a few years until 2030, when his son Leonard Aurelius took over as CEO until the nanosecond buyout, where Damian Knight gobbled up the controlling share and was placed as CEO of Ares up until 2041, when the board voted him out, thanks to the machinations of Leonard, but put Sakahisa Tajika back in the seat, presumably as a buffer between Aurelius and Knight. Of course, that didn't work out, and in June of 2043, due to the failing facilities of Tajika, the board voted Damian Knight back to his seat as chairman of the board of Ares, much to the chagrin of Leonard Aurelius. Needless to say, there is no love lost between Aurelius and Knight, and their squabbles are legendary. Moving on to tech news. Korea found itself with something of a beetle problem. That is, BTL, or Better Than Life. Remember the SimSense chips that you slot and get absolutely engrossed in the show, emotions included? Well, the BTL chips, or beetles, allow you to put your senses and emotions into hyperdrive, essentially creating an experience that was, well, better than life. There was no experience that you could have in real life that could not be had, but better, in SimSense. And you can see why people might have a tendency to get addicted. Of course, regulations were put on these chips later, but the damage was done. And for the really sick puppies out there, once the regulations came down, the beetle industry went underground, and now you see snuff beetles, where the filmmakers get the emotive recordings of someone who actually dies, and then you could experience that death for yourself. Of course, the hitch is, that person needs to die, most often unwillingly, for anyone to slot that chip. And the beetle being what it is, you might just kick the bucket yourself after experiencing it. Still, there it is. Welcome to the sixth world. In Japan, the first Skillsoft tech hits the market, in which you can slot a chip and learn a skill or a profession in record time. Lots of these Skillsofts include the need for skill wire interfaces, but technology marches on, little crows. Now for your daily dose of dragon madness. In September of 2041, the great dragon Sirurg decides he doesn't like the faces of the nice folk on Euro Air Flight 329 over Amazonia. And he grapples and destroys the plane, killing everyone on board. Now, the flight recorder tells of a mage that stepped into the breach made by Sirurg and engaged the worm in magical combat. Which tells me that this wasn't any ordinary mage. It is likely the case that this mage was the reason Sirurg attacked the plane, but since he's dead and Sirurg isn't talking, we'll never know. Still, makes you think twice about getting on a plane, eh? Around the same time, the dragon Masaru actually declares that he is a great dragon and builds himself a little lair on the island of Vancouver. As for how the dragon goes from being normal to great, that's a show for another time. I'm sensing a theme here, Mr. Pink. But the fact remains that there are stages to the lives of dragons, and once they hit the great dragon stage, they become impossible to live with. Now, this is probably the strangest dragon-related news so far. The great dragon Dunkelzahn, or Big D, or Old Blue Scales, or whatever you want to call him, actually starts a talk show. A talk show. He calls it Worm Talk, and him and his interpreter, Nadia Davier, do a full-on topic guest discussion wrap-up talk show. Sort of like the classic Jerry Springer 2D vids from last century, except without all the smut, fighting, and complete lack of class or seriousness. Big D was a legit host, and for whatever reason, kind of touched people. They dug it. And the people that watched over the years became a little less racist, a little more curious, a little less dull. For that reason, I think Dunkelzahn employed magic to influence people's minds, because I don't think metahumanity has it in them to be good. But Here's to me and my experience being wrong. Blue Scales tried. He really did. Aaron the Scribe does a few things of note during this period. First, he throws his support behind the theory that Mother Earth is actually a living entity and, as such, is likely awakened, just like so many of Earth's living creatures, and we should expect actual land and flora to react accordingly in some places. Second, he publishes his breakthrough work called Mankind Ascendant, in which he talks about his sixth world theory, which is a big deal back then, although we have all mostly accepted it by now. Just goes to show you that even a fragged up slaughter like Aaron can be right sometimes. Finally, the Pope allows women to become priests. The Yakuza kick the Koreans out of their gang, and so the Shun gangsters create the Seolpa Ring's organized crime syndicate. And the Universal Brotherhood opens up his first chapter in California. Don't know much about the Universal Brotherhood? Read a fraggin' book! They were the biggest spot of light on the planet for a lot of people during the 40s. And that's all I'm going to say about that for right now. But what I will say is that you have wasted another perfectly good slot of time listening to the Anarchy and Podcasting Network. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanimium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, Opti, who wonders why no one has tried to start up a universal sisterhood, and then promptly answers his own question and calls himself a slotface. Enjoy your freedom. It may get you killed, but it is still better than the first half of the third season of Worm Talk.